Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest this evening is Dr. Allison Stokes. She's the founding director of the Women's Interfaith Institute in the Finger Lakes. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thank you, Tish. It's wonderful to be here.
Great. I want to begin by asking you about your vision for the Women's Interfaith Institute. I know you founded one in the Berkshires in Massachusetts in 1993. What prompted this project?
Well, I was meeting with a group of clergy women who were all within the United Church of Christ, my denomination, to write a book. And we met monthly. And we did this for a period of about 2 years. And other religious leaders, women from different faith traditions and different denominations, wanted to join us. We were having such a good time.
Was that unusual that different denominations at that time wanted to join each other?
What was unusual at that time was women were still pretty new in ministry. And so what they were looking for was support, mutual support, gathering. The more common it becomes, and more women in this profession, the less need, I think, they feel of gathering together as women.
Would you gather together with conservatives as well? Was it people from different political traditions as well?
Well, you know, in my experience, most conservative religious traditions don't ordain women. They wouldn't be serving in this role.
Even today?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were gathering, and others joined us, and we founded the Institute. It was originally called the Clergy Women's Interfaith Institute. We incorporated as a nonprofit 501c3 group, and a number of years later, when women who weren't clergy wanted to join us, we went through the legal steps to change the name to Women's Interfaith Institute, to drop the clergy.
Mm-hmm. So you founded the one in the Berkshires, and then you moved here, and you founded one, which
That's right.
The home of this one is in Seneca Falls.
That's right. I moved to Ithaca to become Ithaca College chaplain in 2001, and a woman in our group in the Berkshires had wanted to donate her library. She was a professor. She was retiring. She had an enormous library collection. And I had been looking while I was in the Berkshires for housing for that and hadn't found any. And then moved here and continued looking for suitable housing for a library. And one day I was driving through Seneca Falls.
This is a great story.
You remember this
yes,
story?
Yes, I do.
I was driving through Seneca Falls and approached the National Historical Park, which I had been to only once before. And right beside it was a huge red brick church with a sign outside that said, "For sale." And across the realtor sign said, "Price reduced." And I thought, oh, wow, wouldn't that be a great place for a library and for a meeting place? And I thought the location was phenomenal.
And talk about this church. How old is this church?
It was built in 1871. For people who are familiar with Seneca Falls and the Women's Rights National Park, National Historic Park, there's the Wesleyan Chapel to the one side of the visitor's center, where the Women's Rights Convention was held in 1848. So it was the same congregation that was in the Wesleyan Chapel that wanted a larger, grander church, and they just built this one. So it was the same Methodist congregation who built this in 1871.
How did this church come about to be for sale anyway?
Right.
You don't hear about churches for sale.
For sale, that's right. That's right. Well, the Methodists had been occupied the building until about the 1920s when they sold it to the Baptists. And the Baptists, I believe it must have been in the 50s or so, 1950s, outgrew the building. I might be a little off in the chronology. We need to get this squared away. Outgrew the building and built a new facility, new church building on 89, if people are familiar with Route 89 coming up the lake between Seneca Falls and Ithaca. They built a new church and sold the building to the Living Hope Assembly of God. And the Assembly of God had one pastor serving two congregations, the Seneca Falls congregation, the Waterloo congregation, and they decided to merge. Mm. And because the Waterloo building was smaller and in better shape, they moved. They were ready to sell this historic building, that fabulous building, but pretty deteriorated. All churches need lots of love and care.
Especially in this climate, I would assume.
That's right. And it's not unlike the problems, we had problems not unlike the problems that other churches in Seneca Falls were facing, and roof needs replacement. And so it was quite a challenge to first raise the money to purchase the church, and then to raise the money to put on a new roof, which we did last summer.
Mm-hmm. I want to segue a little bit from now. I want to ask you, when did you get into the ministry, and what prompted you to get into the ministry in the first place?
Oh, my goodness. I was married and had children, and then as the kids went to school, I went back to graduate school and was in the field of American studies and became quite excited about American religious history, and at that point decided I wanted to teach in a seminary. So I went to divinity school with the notion that I would teach, never dreaming that I would become a minister. I was going to teach this field. My granddad had been a Methodist minister and a college chaplain, and so he was a role model. But when I was in college, my thought was the closest I would get to ministry would be to marry a minister.
How strange the world turns out.
It really has changed.
And do you consider yourself a feminist minister?
Yes. Yeah.
And how has that worked out in congregations that you have touched and visited?
Well, I try to go gently because it changed, especially in matters of religion, takes time. So, for instance, it's very common that most people of faith will speak of Father God, and yet agree that God really has no gender, but are not comfortable talking about Mother God. So I don't either. I mean, generally, I don't want to cause offense unnecessarily, but people are aware of my views. Mm-hmm. And so when women gather together, women of faith from different religions, to form a women's interfaith institute, it's crosses faith boundaries, but we learn from one another and challenge one another and try to understand one another and work together for the common good.
That's what I understand is the whole point of the Women's Interfaith Institute, to bring people of varying religions, communities, together in order to forge some kind of understanding.
That's right.
Because people are so afraid of differences.
Absolutely. And I find people particularly afraid of doing interfaith work or interreligious work. People are fearful that meeting and talking with people of other faiths may somehow weaken their own. But it's my experience, it's just the opposite. As you talk with someone who's trying to understand religion and ask you questions about your religion, you find what you don't know, and it usually sends you back to the teachers or the books or to become more clear about what exactly your faith does teach. And it often deepens people's experience and appreciation of their own tradition. So it usually has the effect of making people stronger in where they are than weakening it.
That's very interesting. I want to talk to you a little bit about your dynamic board that you have developed for the Seneca Falls Institute.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about them.
Okay, sure. I'd love to do that. When I talked with some women about purchasing this building, we incorporated as a 501c3 organization in the Finger Lakes as an affiliate group of the Women's Interfaith Institute in the Berkshires. So that meant when you incorporate, you need a board. So it was establishing a board, reaching out. And one of the first women I met, a phenomenal woman, became president of our board, the Reverend Marilyn Foster. And she's the first woman pastor in Seneca Falls. She's pastor of the United Methodist Church and has been there for quite a number of years and became president of our board. Another clergywoman in Seneca Falls is Martha Forche of the Trinity Episcopal Church.
Were these women shocked that something like this was going to manifest in their town? When you approached them, were they absolutely
I think they
shocked?
Were just not shocked so much as just delighted. And most women I've talked to, whether they're clergy or lay people, the realtor who worked on the sale, Gail Lohr, from Century 21, was thrilled that women were coming in with a spiritual a focus to serve the community, to open the doors to the community. That's a huge part of what we're doing, is providing space for people to meet and do the things that'll bring people together. So, but we don't have just Christian women in our board. We have a woman who's very involved in the Eastern religions, Buddhism, Hinduism, and we want to Judaism, of course. We've had a Muslim woman on our board, a teacher from a professor from Hobart Williams Smith, who is now leaving, so we're going to need to find another Muslim person to replace her. So that we want the religious diversity, but we also want racial, ethnic diversity as mm-hmm. well, African American women, Native American women.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So the Institute offers retreats and discussions and study groups and public programs.
Right.
Talk to us about some of the things you've done and some of the things you hope to do in the future.
Oh, Tish, what a great question. I'd love to do that. One of the most exciting things that we did was that on September 15th, 2003, was the 150th anniversary of the ordination of the first woman in this country.
Wow.
Antoinette Brown Blackwell. In 1853, had been, I must have that wrong, 1858? I'm not sure.
Is she a relation to Elizabeth Blackwell, the first woman doctor
yes,
in the country?
Yes, her sister-in-law.
Really?
Yeah. So we had the 150th on the exact day of her ordination, and she grew up in nearby Henrietta, so they have a museum there at her home, I believe. So we gathered quite a few people from the area for that celebration, and one woman came and portrayed her in her native dress, her costume of the time, the dress of the time, and had memorized her words, and it was wonderful. She addressed us as if she was Blackwell.
That's great. Do you work with the Women's Historical Museum is right next to your church. Do you
right.
work with them? Have you done some
We
joints?
Cooperate, absolutely. They're very glad that we're there. They have a small theater for showing an introductory video to their national park and visitor center. But the theater seats only about 45 people, and we have seating for over 200. So when they have large events, they have used our space and have been so good to us in terms of lending us equipment when we need it or folding chairs, whatever. So we have a very good working relationship with them.
That has to be providence to have a woman's interfaith institute run by a feminist minister next to the historical.
That's right. That's how it
almost
felt.
Almost a miracle that something like that would coalesce.
Well, Tish, that's how doors kept opening, and people came to us saying, how can we help? When the sign went up out front, Women's Interfaith Institute, people didn't know what it was, but just the words conveyed something that excited them. I'd get phone calls. I want to be part of this. Tell me how to do that.
Yeah, I remember when I first visited the museum, we were wandering around, and the person I was with said, look at this, Tish. What is this?
Right.
Women's Interfaith Institute. What is
yeah.
that? You know, so, and then we consequently met soon after that.
That's right. Well, you know, Tish, I feel that in a sense we're pioneers. We're carrying on the legacy of the women, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony and others, who were working for women's rights back in the 1840s, 50s, 60s, right on to the beginning of the 20th century. And in a different way, we're carrying forward that legacy in bridging difference, crossing boundaries, reaching out to others in a way that's still pretty new.
Mm-hmm. And in today's climate, certainly,
right. Yes.
Almost
yes.
Revolutionary in some ways.
When our country is becoming, it feels like, very polarized. And we're working toward the opposite, to bring people together. Mm-hmm. And as you're doing in this program, getting to some of the deeper issues and having people who may not share similar viewpoints, but can learn to understand the other and
You're listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Dr. Allison Stokes from the Women's Interfaith Institute. So bringing people together, we talked about this radio show many, many months ago.
We did.
Just so our listeners know, the Institute is going to be supporting us in many different ways because we all have this vision to forge a platform for people of various communities and traditions and political sides to come together and try to understand each other. Allison and I got together and talked about the fact that the airwaves and the culture today have become these screaming, name-calling arenas, yeah. And we want to bring it down to a level where we can at least try to listen to each other and understand each other. And hence, that's in the coming months what we hope this program will become.
And I think that's one of the reasons we're working so hard to raise the funds that we need to preserve this building and this space for ourselves, because it's so symbolic of what we're trying to do, is that different religious groups, faiths, institutions have their own places of worship and their own spaces, and there isn't space designated for inter-religious or multi-faith conversations, just the way you're wanting to create this space on the airwaves for what you're doing in.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any resistance from the Seneca Falls area for
no.
this?
No. It's been phenomenal, the kind of welcome we've had, I've felt. And maybe those who are not pleased with us being there just have kept quiet or not let me know about it. But people have welcomed us and are thrilled. Well, Tish, partly because this church was rather dilapidated looking, and we're visually, it was an eyesore. Inside,
she came in and gentrified the community.
Well, the congregation that was in the building, the Living Hope Assembly of God, had taken very good care of the interior space. So when people come in, they're pleasantly surprised. They'll say, wow, this is beautiful.
It is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, so it's very lovely. And
to talk about the quilts and some of the art exhibits you've had at the Institute.
That's right. Okay, you were asking what we've done, and I've told you about one program, but we do have these beautiful walls that are open spaces, and our stained glass windows are relatively free of any symbolism, less so than you would expect in most Christian churches. So it allows a place for art. And right now we have a phenomenal exhibit there by Alice Gant from Ithaca, who does narrative quilts. And I was thrilled when we received memorial funds from a high school friend of mine, actually, to purchase one of her quilts. And it's become a focal point. It's now part of the permanent collection in our space of Sojourner Truth. It's it was on loan for a while. It was in Albany, an exhibit that Alice was doing, but Sojourner is back on our walls. And to me, it's a thrill because here was a woman, African-American woman, spiritual leader, and so just having this lovely quilt hanging with her silhouette that the title is She Sings Her Truth, almost says it all, who we are.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, what do you do about the issue of men? Are they allowed to join the Institute?
That comes up all the time. I'm really glad you asked, because men will say they feel excluded, or, do I really belong here? Is it okay if I come? And certainly we're not trying to exclude anyone at all.
So they can become members.
Yes, they're very welcome, and to come to the programs that we have and whatever it is that we're offering. And many men do. But it is important to say that they are welcome, but also to hold out for it being okay to have still a gathering place for women, because we're at a point in our history where that's important. Someday, when we get farther along and women's leadership doesn't need special support the way it does now, our mission statement says that we are women supporting women of diverse faiths in generating spiritual leadership, scholarship, and service. So leadership development is partly what we're about. Scholarship and service, all of those things.
Well, explain to our listeners what scholarship means.
Well, and that's the institute part of it. Mm-hmm. That we do have this phenomenal book collection, and one of these days we'll get it cataloged and make it available. But research in the area of women's leadership, in the areas of interfaith work, it does have an intellectual component to what we do. But it is an umbrella so that people could come in at wherever point they want to connect. Maybe it is through service and not scholarship. Mm-hmm. But because we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, we can seek grants. Someone who has a particular academic interest that fits our mission could come to us and ask to be able to write a grant through the Women's Interfaith Institute, just with the way the Institute can seek grants to support your program.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see for the future? Developing women leadership? When you say that, are you talking about leaders in the religious communities or in the political communities or everywhere?
Everywhere, I think. Probably particularly the religious communities, but we will support leadership mm-hmm. wherever. Mm-hmm. And one of our hopes would be that affiliate groups would spring up in other places. We have the affiliate group in the Berkshires, our founding mothers. Mm-hmm. Now this group in Seneca Falls, Finger Lakes area, but someone is talking about starting one in the Pioneer Valley in Massachusetts. Someone's talking about one in India.
Really?
And I hope you'll have her on your program when she visits from India.
So she's going to visit, and she's...
She's coming to Seneca Falls.
Is she coming here to find out more about how to do it?
No, not that. That's not the point of her visit. She'll be visiting her friend, Roxanne Gupta, who is a member of our board, and talking in this area about her own work in India. But we're going to use the occasion of the visit to talk about what she might do in terms of the women's interfaith. That's certainly not the focus of her visit. But
does the women's interfaith get involved in political issues?
No.
Not at all, because you're a 501.
Probably not.
Thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking in terms of work in regard to the separation of church and state, which is a concern to a lot of religious people that I know.
Sure.
At this point.
Well, one of the presenting issues, of course, in our area is the Native American land claim. And so I guess that is a political issue. And whatever we might do to bring understanding there or to bring people together, we'd certainly like to have Native American women come and tell us more about their faith and their culture. And so if that would lead to understanding, that would be something that would be wonderful for us to do. And maybe it would have political ramifications, but we'd want to stay away from talking about that issue probably.
I see. Yeah, that's a fine line. I
do
understand.
You see? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. How does one get involved?
Well, we do have a website, www.womensinterfaithinstitute, all one word, womensinterfaithinstitute.org. Women's without the apostrophe, yes, leave out the apostrophe, but womensinterfaithinstitute.org. And if people would like to speak with me about how they might get involved or connect with us, I'd be happy to have someone email me. It's astokes at earthlink.net is my internet address. And I would really welcome inquiries. Tish, as you know, and I can tell your listeners, I'm a Protestant chaplain at Ithaca College, but I'm retiring at the end of May, and so I will be devoting my full time to the Institute. I do live in Seneca Falls, and will be devoting my retirement to this.
You are not going to retire.
Okay.
However,
right? Okay.
Retirement means.
Well, that's right.
Lie down.
For many people around here, I'm sure that doesn't. But
but what do you see for the future? More workshops, speakers coming in, more
retreats.
Development in the city, and
oh golly, it feels like the sky's the limit. We have all kinds of ideas going. One would be to offer a spiritual tour of the area, going to the different sites in this greater upstate New York area that are prominent in American religious history. We could set up tours. We could bring people from other parts of the country to come to the Institute. In fact, our board president, Marilyn Foster, has said that the Northeast United Methodist clergy women want to gather here in September. And so they could come to the Institute, but use that as a jumping off place to visit the different historic sites in Scenic Falls and the greater area, to visit the wineries, to, you know, mm-hmm. we want to help develop the area economically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that by bringing people here, we can do our part to support tourism in this area.
Have you thought about sending speakers out into the school systems and talking about tolerance in regard to Christianity?
Well, I know. I think that was an idea of yours, right?
It has been an idea of mine
that
for a long time.
You've suggested to
and
us.
And it seems to be much more in need at this point in this climate that we have in this country right now.
Well, you know, what we want to do is be a place for people to come with their ideas, and we enable them. So if, you know, I think you have spoken with me about this idea before, and we'd say, yes, how can we go with this? Tell us more. That's what we want to do is help people fulfill their dreams.
Well, I've heard a lot of people say recently, where are all the sane, good Christians? Because there seems to be this screeching voice coming out of our government and some members of our political establishments. And people do wonder where the good Christians are. Do you have an answer for that? The people with the same voices who aren't trying to get involved in people's lives and bring religion into the schools and keep the separation between church and state?
Well, I guess part of the question has been, why have some of the liberal Christians or the progressive Christians been seemingly silent? And I think part of the problem is that we have to learn how to be very vocal about our beliefs and yet not alienate people. So to be able, we had a speaker recently at the college, at Ithaca College, the Protestant community brought in a bishop who was very forthright about his very liberal ideas, his progressive ideas, but at the same time kept saying, I recognize there are people in my audience who will not agree with me, who have a very different view on this, and that's okay. We have to learn how to talk with one another and respect one another and agree to disagree. And that's what I've been working on the campus as well, and it's what I want to work on, is to say that we need to be very articulate about our views, but at the same time not send others running in the other direction. How can we stay in the same room and find common cause or work for the common good, despite our differences, whether it's between Christians or between people of different faiths? Conflict is hard. We all know that.
Oh, absolutely.
Tish, you were at a program, our opening for the Institute in June.
Yes.
It was bringing peace to life. That's what we're about.
That was the theme, absolutely. Bringing peace to life, sorely needed in this climate.
Yeah, that's what we're about.
Thank you for being with us, Allison.
Thanks for asking me.
Appreciate
it's been a pleasure.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We're being sponsored by the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls and by Professor Joe LaQuatra. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. Please plan to join me next week for another segment of Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman.